You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome to episode 32 of the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, August 13th. I'm Martin Spriggs.
And I'm Sally Draper.
And we are your weekly hosts for a conversation about all kinds of technology topics, but specifically those that might be of some usefulness in your particular ministry. Good morning, Sally. How are you?
I'm great, Martin. I've survived school registration night, so yes, looks like we're going to get these kids back in school before too much longer.
Yeah, I've got a couple of move-in dates for the two kids in college, and also I have my youngest is starting at Luther Prep, too. So everybody's moving out, so we're kind of empty nesters, but they kind of find their way back eventually. So it's not as dramatic as that when they come back. So. Well, you and I kind of continue our march through what I'll call the summer of the conference. Two weeks ago, I was at worship conference out in St. Peter, Minnesota. Last week, you were in Madison, Wisconsin for a conference that really is going to predominate the beginning part of our show and our conversation about that conference. And then coming up this week, I'm headed to Dallas for the Echo Conference, which is a conference about technology and ministry. Sally, do you have kind of conference strategies that you put in place when you go to conferences? I know that they can be overwhelming, especially, you know, the bigger ones where there's so many workshops, and, you know, it's almost tough to take all of it away. So, you know, when you approach a conference, how do you attack it? Do you have a particular strategy you use?
Well, I do. I don't know if it's the greatest strategy, but you're right on target that it can get really overwhelming very quickly. So there's a couple of things that I like when I'm at a conference. Number one, I want to make sure that I'm connected to the internet. So hopefully all of our conference venues are getting up to speed with wireless internet connections availability so that people with laptops can be connected. So
why is that important for you?
Well, especially at a technology conference, it helps a lot because you can actually go to sites, you know, connect to blogs, look at links that they're discussing as they're discussing it. It just makes you a lot more engaged in the presentations. It's not kind of a mindless thing that they're just throwing at you, but you're able to participate and actually, you know, be out on the web and exploring the tools as they're throwing them out to you. So that's really huge. Another conference technique I like to do, and this is more being an engaged kind of learner, not just going on autopilot, I like to take notes using a mind mapping tool. Mm-hmm. It helps me to grasp the concepts that are being thrown out to me, to put it down in a written format, and also
forces
to
you
organize,
to organize it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
exactly. So good. So I've got my mind manager running all the time, and I'm taking notes, and that just really reinforces concepts to me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, to kind of attack the overwhelming nature of everything that you hear, I do my best to leave each session that I attend with just one takeaway, one thing that I'm going to walk away and spend some time on later, you know, to try to implement or to at least explore further to see if it's worth implementing into my work routines or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe they throw 20 things at you, but you've got to have a little bit of discernment there, knowing that there's no way you can incorporate every single thing that you hear, and try to zero in on one or maybe two particular tools or concepts that you heard during the presentation that you want to take away and give it a try.
So yeah, absolutely.
That's my strategy. Do you have anything to add to that?
Those are great. Those are great suggestions, and I use both of those. One other one that I try to keep in mind when I go to a conference is what, you know, if I'm kind of in the trainer position, you know, share it. You know, go in with a approach that I want to take this back and I want to share it with other people, because that obviously reinforces it. And you never really learn something or capture something than if you have to ultimately teach it to somebody else. So I kind of take notes and think of things that I want to share with other people and then come back and do it. And then you're reinforcing what you did. And plus you're sharing the wealth too. So it's not just you and that knowledge that sits in your head, but you're giving creative ideas to other people. So it really becomes kind of a team event at that point.
Very good, yes.
So you attended a conference this past week in Madison called Distance Teaching and Learning Conference 2008, and you called it the Web 2.0 Wonderland, or was that their name?
No, that was me.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about what you learned there, and we'll do the same thing next week as I come back from my conference in Dallas, but this week we're going to talk about distance teaching and learning. So what did you come back with, Sally?
Well, I guess, you know, the conference is primarily targeted to universities that are doing online education. So, you know, I'm an anomaly out there in the fact that I'm trying to do online ed resources for a church organization. So that made me a little bit different. A lot of the talks and things at the conference were centered around more academia kind of subjects and research into. And what I kind of came away with was, wow, it's great they're doing all that great research, and I can just piggyback onto that and design my online learning tools around, you know, things that that are proven through research to be effective. What I found was I attended this conference about 3 years ago, and everyone was really talking about learning management systems. So things like Blackboard and WebCT, and of course Moodle are our open source alternative to those fee-based LMSs, and all the tools that you could do within the learning management system. In the 3 years since I first attended the conference, what's changed about the conference is that everyone's talking about Web 2.0 tools and just the wonderland that exists out there for developing and sharing resources around a course or around a collaborative effort or for whatever needs that you have. There's just a wonderful set of tools out there. And I came away with four new tools that I want to really dig in and explore further and that I want to share with our listeners today. And so we'll just kind of walk through a couple of these Web 2.0 tools that I discovered at the conference. The first one being Vue, and that's Vue.com, VYEW.com.
And they make these URLs so funky now that you really have to write them down. They're running out of letters.
Exactly. We're challenging the spell checkers of the world with all these spellings and things. Vue is a web conferencing tool. So what it allows you to do is connect. For voice, you can do it over the internet with voice over internet protocol embedded right there in the Vue window, or you can connect through your regular telephone lines, and they'll even give you a telephone number that you can everyone in your meeting can call a common telephone number. Now, you're going to have to pay for long distance charges if you choose to use that method, but so you're connected and all talking. That's more like a conference call, which is kind of an old school way of connecting with a group. But what Vue adds to the picture is a connection on the web as well, so that you can all view a common website and real time see edits, presentations or other documents and things brought up on that website and be able to discuss them over the audio connection. There's also even a chat component to Vue. Now, we've used something like this at the Senate Administration Building for quite a while to do our distance meetings and things, but it's a fee-based program. And what I love about Web 2.0, my favorite word, is free. Mm-hmm. And Vue is a free tool. I think there's probably graduated levels that you can pay for additional, you know, options and things, but you can use it for totally free. I used it this past weekend. My dad got a new computer down in Mississippi, and we spent 2.5 hours on Vue as I watched his computer screen and helped him, you know, install new software and things like that.
So there's screen sharing and desktop sharing.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
So, you know,
Yeah, I looked at it a little bit. It really is kind of a Web 2.0 looking app. And I think there is video conferencing. I think you can have up to 5 viewers. I don't know. Did you try video conferencing at all?
Not at all, no.
See, that's the challenge with a lot of apps today. You know, when you start, you know, implementing the video side, you know, the bandwidth really gets ratcheted down. But, you know, from what I played with, it appears pretty solid. And it's in version 3.0, so it's been around for some time. So it sounds like it's got some traction here and probably worth a look if you have a ministry application for that. So what are some of the uses that you would envision a congregation or a pastor, teacher, or another Wells organization using this for?
Well, I think it's anything that you want to connect and collaborate with long distance. So if you have meetings that you need to conduct, potentially connecting pastors to other pastors even, just for Bible study opportunities and that kind of thing. If you have members that are distance, you know, from your church and you want to include them in maybe a Bible information class or something like this, this would be a platform for you to conduct those kind of meetings.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
What's
next up on the list? Yeah, I have a new website called Digo. It's D-I-I-G-O, another spelling challenge for you there. And Digo is in the category of social bookmarking. We've talked a lot on our show about Delicious, a social bookmarking site where you can tag certain websites with different tags and make them available to others, you know, and share kind of what your favorite links are through Delicious. And that's exactly what Digo does. It allows you to tag websites, you know, as you do research or find different links that you want to hold on to, you can store them on this website. So they're not tied to your particular computer favorites list, but they're out there in the cloud. They're out there on the internet. You can access them from any computer, and you have list of links and things that are organized into different categories using tagging. So very powerful tool, social bookmarking, but Digo has another layer to it that makes it really interesting to me. And that is the fact that you can, as you tag a website, you can also highlight and add notes to that website. Through the Digo tool, you can just drag across portions of the screen, and it adds like a yellow highlighter pen to the page. So you've found a great website, but you're interested in only one portion of it. This allows you to very quickly and easily identify and draw attention to the area of the website that you want to make sure that you remember and tag, and also to share those tagged pages and highlighted pages with others through the sharing capabilities of the site. And the same is true with the note taking, you know, just a really powerful thing to be able to stick a little sticky note on a web page that says, this is exactly what I'm looking for, or blah, 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 you know, just a reminder to yourself or to others as to why that part of the web page is important to you. So I think kind of notching up that social bookmarking with Digo.
So do you know any of the technology behind this, Sally? Is it there's an application that, or a you know, some kind of add-in that's added to your browser? There must be something that connects these sites to the notes that you take.
Yeah, there is a toolbar that is added to your browser so that you can click on buttons and things in the toolbar to turn on the highlighter and turn on the note capabilities and things like that. So when you sign up for Digo, part of the deal is you get an extra toolbar for your browser.
Okay, similar to what Delicious does then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it is transportable as long as you've got that toolbar in. You know, so if you use a bunch of browsers, different browsers like, you know, we tend to do for testing and such, or if you got a home computer and a work computer, you need to install it on each. But once that's done and you log in, kind of like Delicious, it's always there for you. So whenever you go back to a site, the notes that you've taken on a particular site are available to you, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
So I can see a lot of application for that, too.
Your little notepad for the web, right?
Exactly. Just organizing yourself, keeping up with what you've researched. I mean, when you start looking for things on the web, you end up with a million links to things, and this helps you to add another layer to your research that you're doing. Mm-hmm. And certainly you can share it, too. So I guess, you know, if you had a committee that was researching a particular area, maybe even just like a building project, and you're doing a lot of research and looking at a lot of different links. We just went through buying new computers and all of the peripherals associated with that, you know, cabling and all of those kind of things. When you are doing those kind of research projects, it's nice to have a way to organize that. And that's what DIGO can do for you.
Cool. Very good. Mm-hmm. All right.
All right.
Another
next
one?
Up. Yep.
Okay,
I got
it keeps going.
Next, I want to point you to an online mind mapping tool. It's called mindomo.com, MINDOMO.com. And basically what this allows you to do is create mind maps on the web. And again, it's a free tool. So I know there's others out there that maybe have some fees associated with them. And I think there's a graduated scale. Again, with a lot of these, they start free. And if you want to pay for additional, you know, options and things like that, you can do that. With Mindomo, the free version does have Google Ads down the side of it. So that's a little bit of a drawback. But very easy to get started with this mind mapping tool. Very easy to embed links and other resources and things in the tool. And then what's cool about it is that when you're done, you have a web URL or a web address that you can share with other people, and they can go and view your mind maps. One of the presentations that I attended was done by a lady named Maria Anderson. She's from, I want to say, Muskegon Community College in Michigan. Mm-hmm. And she was a math teacher who a year ago just dug in and decided she was going to teach calculus online. And she's a good example of one of those people that didn't do it within a learning management system, but really took advantage of all the Web 2.0 tools and kind of did her teaching on the fly. She created a blog, and she links to a lot of different resources, and that's what her students use to get their class resources. And she used Mindomo for her presentation. I actually have a couple of mind maps that I'm going to link to in our show notes as examples. And what's cool about it is her presentation was on Web 2.0 and on organizing your digital self. So she has these way-loaded mind maps just full of excellent resources on those two topics. And so what you'll see is a cool example of Mindomo at work, but then you'll also see a lot of great links that you can use beyond the ones that we're talking about here this morning. So check out Maria's mind maps, and you'll see an example of what you can do with Mindomo.
Yeah. I'm just looking on their site. They've got a number of versions available. I assume they kind of function the same way. There's a free one that you're talking about. They have one for business. They have one called Premium, which is $6 a month for unlimited maps, so there must be a restriction on the free one. But they also have Mindomo Education, which is reduced pricing, although they don't show it. You know, you have to log in to get the pricing, but I'm assuming it's somewhat less than the premium version. But that's for educational and nonprofit organizations, so that would apply to most of our listeners. So if that's something of interest, that sounds like something to explore.
Yeah, definitely. I could see some applications. As you said, for educators, it's a great way to organize your notes, to make a presentation, and, you know, to give someone a takeaway like Maria did. She gave us two great mind maps that we can use after her presentation. So, you know, you could do the same thing for any presentations you'd have to do. You could also use it to map out any projects or events that are happening in your congregation. And like I said, you've got that link. You can embed that link on your website. Site or whatever, so that people can go back and reference your mind map after the meeting or the presentation that you've held.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. I'm going to try that.
Yes. Yeah. Last one for you today is a glossary building utility. Now, this one I was thinking, you know, particularly of educators who would be working with a glossary, maybe for catechism class or whatever. And this is just a really quick and easy utility to use. It's a free download developed by the University of Wisconsin in Madison. They actually develop things for their educators to use, and then they make them available as open source freeware for anyone to take advantage of. So a quick little download, and you have this Flash-based glossary builder, and the output of the glossary is just regular HTML pages that you can put anywhere on a web server and link to very easily and quickly. So it has cascading style sheets that you can get in and customize if you want to change the look and feel of it, but just right out of the box, super easy to use and a very quick way to build a glossary. You can include images and links and all kinds of things as you're defining the terms of your glossary. So an excellent little utility that can fit in a lot of different ways as you're doing your work.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Going back to Digo, I found on their site where the word Digo comes from. Did you see that?
No, I didn't read that.
It's an abbreviation for Digest of Internet Information Groups and Other Stuff.
Oh, real technical.
And it says, you see, we especially like the other stuff part. It gives us an open mandate to relentlessly innovate and provide better and better value to our users. It's also an interesting section here that we should maybe talk about at another show. It says, start degoing and go green. Green is kind of the buzzword now of all companies to try and reduce paper. They say our users have found using Digo substantially reduces the need to print stuff on paper, so we strongly urge you to start degoing and save the earth, quote unquote. That is an interesting concept, because part of the advantage of the Web 2.0 applications out there is they allow you to invest more and more of your time and energy online. So obviously you need to be online, but that helps you kind of move away from printing everything and having file folders and binders full of stuff. If you can kind of push that into these Web 2.0 applications like Mind Maps or other things, they're available to you online, and you can reduce your paperwork that way. So we should maybe spend some time talking about some of the pluses and again, some of the minuses involved with that too.
Sounds like a good idea, Martin. I like what you said about the other stuff as well, or what Digo said about the other stuff. And that's what we're finding with a lot of Web 2.0 tools, is that the tools exist, but we can be really creative in our usage of them, and who
right.
knows where that's going to lead. You mm-hmm. know, like the going green, like ministry applications for these tools that are designed for business or whatever. You know, I mean, let's make use of these great tools, and you know, kind of the sky's the limit.
Yep. Just a caveat there, obviously, you know, do your research on Web 2.0 applications. You don't want to invest a lot of time and energy and sink a lot of your data into some of these tools that may not have a long shelf life. So you want to be careful with which tools you choose. And just because we bring them up here on the show does not mean that we necessarily support or ultimately advocate, jumping in with both feet without really kind of testing the waters. So just buyer beware. Most of these are free, but you're still a buyer, and you still ought to beware. So, up next is our interview. We had the privilege of sitting down with Brian Gerlach, Pastor Brian Gerlach, from the Synod Administration Building here. He is our administrator for the Commission on Worship, and we thought it would be appropriate to sit down with Brian and talk about the electronic version of the hymnal supplement. On the heels of the worship conference, it was good timing, and Brian was good enough to spend 10-15 minutes with us and answer our questions about what's going on with this electronic release, this digital release of the hymnal supplement material. So let's listen to our conversation with Brian. Joining us today is Brian Gerlach, Administrator for the Commission on Worship for Wells. Welcome, Brian. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's nice to be here and talk about such an exciting new product.
Well, one of the things that Sally and I wanted to discuss with you kind of on the heels of the worship conference is this whole concept of a worship supplement, and more of interest maybe even for our listeners, being a technology show, is the electronic editions of the worship supplement that's going to be coming out, I assume, later this year. So thanks for taking the time. We may follow this up with another interview once this is actually released, when we know a little bit more about some of the specifics, but it sounds like some of the details are already worked out here. So maybe, Brian, if you could just tell us, first of all, what the supplement is, you know, electronic or otherwise, and then we can kind of dive into the electronic portions of it.
Well, I guess I can say that the supplement is an attempt to help Wells parishes not do with our 1993 hymnal what many of us did with the 1941 hymnal, which is simply to use the hymnal only and not a whole lot else.
Mm-hmm.
So the supplement, at only 15 years into the life of the new hymnal, brings a whole bunch of new hymns and psalms and devotions, meditations they're called, and some liturgical resources to Wells parishes that would like to use it.
Now, when I was up at the worship conference, I sat in on Kermit Moldenhauer's presentation on the supplement, and he talked about the 15-year cycle that you're in. So 15 years after the release of the hymnal comes the supplement and, you know, some of the supplementary materials, and then is the idea then another 15 years a new hymnal?
Well, that is an idea that was articulated by the Commission on Worship back in the early 90s when the new hymnal was finally coming out. It's not by any rule of hymnal publishing, simply that we don't want to be in the same kind of situation we were in the 80s when it was high time to be moving on and we hadn't moved on yet. But especially with the amount of change that is happening in worship, it's probably very beneficial that we have something new at this point and still consider whether or not a new hymnal is a good idea 15 years down the road or so.
Okay. So this is kind of exciting. You know, 15 years, we kind of have a refresh. We have some new materials and such. It's not the kind of the sampler of old. It's a true supplement, and there's resources. And a big part of these resources, I guess, this year with this launch are the electronic portions of that. Tell us a little bit about what those are.
Well, the electronic edition takes advantage of technology to deliver product to congregations in a way that simply would not be feasible if they were delivered in traditional publishing modes like paper. We've done this with some other resources recently as well, but the amount of variety and additional instrumental helps and desktop publishing helps that we can provide really make this a powerful tool.
So what exactly is included with the electronic version? I understand print. I'm familiar with the current hymnal and how the hymnal supplement, we actually got to see it at the worship conference, has, you know, like you said, the traditional liturgies and psalms and hymns in it. What do we get if we purchase this electronic version?
There are really two different electronic components that one can acquire. One allows printing everything in a worship folder, so it's in effect a replacement for pew editions. A congregation, if it chooses, could not buy the pew edition at all and only buy the electronic edition that allows them to print things out. In addition to that edition, which we call the electronic edition, there is an accompaniment edition, which will include the standard paper edition for organ, piano. But that comes also with a CD that includes all kinds of instrumental parts, everything from C and B flat parts to full brass to alternate harmonizations to pianistic settings to be used instead of the standard organ harmonization. And that resource is the one that I think many of the committee members are most excited about.
So there are pieces of content that are pluggable into a worship folder, so they're in TIFF format or PDF-type format so that they can be placed in the worship folder. I understand there are also MIDI files as well that could be used for congregations maybe within the context of worship or to at least listen to the music that's on it.
That's right. MIDI comes with the accompaniment edition for those who choose to use it. And I believe there are both standard organ-style MIDI files but also more pianistic styles available also in MIDI format.
So are there samples as well? Did you do some recording and place those on the CD so you could actually hear these pieces? I know, you know, when I was in the ministry, one of the challenges that I had was kind of listening, you know, looking at a piece of paper and trying to envision what it sounded like. I'm not a piano player, not a great singer either. So are there resources like that available?
Well, lots of people are in that boat, and especially lots of pastors.
Right.
Musicians tend to be able to figure it out more easily.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have samples in the sense of a wave file or
okay.
an audio file. But since most computers can play MIDI now,
right.
Those files should give a very obvious rendition of what the music sounds like to anybody who needs that.
Mm-hmm.
These MIDI files can also be useful in a Lutheran elementary school classroom because not every teacher is capable of playing the chords on a piano as well.
Mm-hmm. the concept of an electronic edition, is that something that might be carried across to the regular hymnal as well?
That's a great idea. I believe that with a new version of HymnSoft that is in the works, there may be a possibility of incorporating, obviously, the MIDI files. That's obvious that we would do that. But also some of the TIFF files that would enable creating service folders. We get several requests of that per year, and I'm sure there are more people who would like to see it, so I hope that that can be part of a future product.
Mm-hmm. So are there some things that aren't in the electronic edition that are only in paper at this point with the supplement? Or is everything there?
I'm not sure on that. Certainly everything in the Pew edition is available in what we call the electronic edition, which is different than the accompaniment edition with its electronic CD.
Who's it for when you put this electronic edition together? How did you figure it would be used?
Well, keep in mind the two different CDs again. The electronic edition that replaces the Pew edition or can be used in conjunction with the Pew edition, some churches will buy both, that would be for the pastor in creating worship folders or for someone in the church office, the secretary or others who do that work. No doubt some applications would work also in schools, again, where teachers could use some of the meditations. The other CD that comes with the accompaniment edition, that would primarily be for musicians.
Mm-hmm.
Not only the organist or pianist, though, because there are handbell parts available, instrumental parts. So where there's a desire to have more instrumental variety in worship, the CD that comes with the accompaniment edition will be a tremendous resource.
Talk a little bit about licensing, because it's in an electronic format. Obviously, that makes it easier to use in many different venues and in many different formats. Are there considerations there that somebody would need to think through as they use this? Obviously, with a piece of paper, you know, with a document, whatever, a hymnal, you know, that's kind of built in. How about these kinds of resources?
Yes, there's a initial purchase price as an NPH product, but then an annual license will be necessary for the reproduction as well, and that license is based on the size of the congregation. The vast majority of materials will be covered under onelicense.net. Mm-hmm. There's only a handful that are not. And NPH is still sorting out some of those details.
So if a congregation has a onelicense.net account, they're should be good for the most part.
They are all set to go. They just need to buy the electronic component, and they're ready to roll.
Mm-hmm. Do most of our congregations have that, do you think?
We don't have statistics on how many do or don't, but with the growing number of resources that depend on it and the sales of those resources, it would seem to indicate a fairly high percentage, unless, of course, they're using only Pew editions and paper copies.
Right. And onelicense.net is fairly economical as well.
It is. It really is. Although, as congregations sort this out, if they extrapolate out, say, 8 years or so, or even earlier, there may be a break-even point where the Pew edition actually is far less expensive. But then, of course, you're sacrificing the convenience of what you can do with desktop publishing.
Exactly, exactly. So the big question, Brian, is when is all this available? I know that sometime is a moving target, but I know that we've seen pre-release copies at this point. What can our people expect as far as availability?
Well, at this point, Northwestern Publishing House is simply saying fall availability.
Okay.
People can buy the Pew edition in its standard binding or its spiral binding now already.
Okay.
But the others are still in their finishing stages with publishing and design. And
okay. So I assume just watch the MPH website and or the worship site as well.
Yes, watch either site. There is a specific hymnal supplement page off of the worship homepage, and every bit of information we can share will be there.
Okay. Yeah, we'll put that link to that webpage in the show notes. Brian, thanks very much for sharing with us. This is kind of an exciting, you know, frontier for worship, and I know that probably much anticipated piece of work that our congregations are looking forward to using.
Well, it's nice to have the chance to get the word out in this technological way, and we're very excited as to how this supplement will serve Wells parishes.
Good. Thanks, Brian. Brian referenced the worship website. We'll certainly put a link to that in our show notes. But there's also another resource that's on wells.net, Sally, that might provide some insight into the supplement, right?
That's right. The Worship Office regularly releases a newsletter called Worship the Lord. And their newsletter number 30, I think it was their May issue, was totally focused on the electronic version of the supplement. And so there's some great articles there that we want to make sure and link to as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you want to get to the worship site, it's wells.net/worship. And you can find all of that stuff there. And we'll put a direct link to the Worship the Lord newsletter online as well in our show notes. So thanks again to Brian. It's an exciting time for the worship committee as they're launching this supplement. Up next, our picks of the week. Sally, what's your pick this week?
Well, my pick this week was generated actually by an email question that I received from Dave Stute. He's a staff minister up in Canada, and he was looking for a way to convert some files that he had. He had video files in a certain format. He wanted them in a different format. And, you know, there's certainly a lot of different ways you can approach that, but one that I've found to be pretty effective and also one that doesn't cost anything, again, my favorite word is free for the day, is using an online file conversion utility. So you don't have to have any particular software on your computer, but what you can do is upload a file to the site, and then it will convert it and send you the new version in a different format. And there's a lot of these out there. The one I'm going to focus on today is called youconvertit.com, and the URL is just all of that spelled out together, youconvertit.com. We'll have a link in the show notes. And the site basically allows you to convert just about anything from one format to another. Certainly you can convert files, image, audio, video, document files, all of that kind of stuff. You can also convert any video that you find online, say on YouTube or TeacherTube. You find a video and you can link to it online, but you'd actually like to have a copy of the file in a different format or something like that. You can actually just feed it a URL from YouTube or TeacherTube or whatever site, and it'll convert the video for you and, you know, send you a link to the new version. And, you know, just to completely cover the whole conversion arena, they even have a page on their site where you can convert from various units of measurement. So if you want to go from meters to feet, they got you covered there as well. So what's cool about it is that they send you, when it's done with the conversion, they send you a link to a file that exists out on the web, and you can use that link to download the file to your own computer. And that link is active for 7 days. They even have a service, a free service on their site, where you can send people large files so that if your email doesn't allow you to attach a file that's 20 meg or something like that, you can upload it to their site, and it will email the person that you want to receive it a link to it so they can download the file from the internet rather than transmitting large files through email. So lots of options there for you at youconvertit.com.
Couple questions, Sally. Is this an encrypted site, or is it password protected in any way, or are you kind of open for whoever may stumble across these files? You have to be careful there, do you know?
Yeah, there isn't any kind of a password protection scheme at all. Obviously, the URLs where the files are stored are pretty long and, you know, hard to guess and everything, but no, there's no encryption layer to this YouConvertit site.
Okay. And second question, is there a file size limit that you can convert? I know some of these video files could be really huge.
Right. I did not find anything in any of their, you know, FAQs or online, you know, disclaimers or anything that indicated there was a limit. I didn't try anything that was super large. I think the one I tried was 20 meg.
Okay.
And it handled that just fine.
Cool. Good. Give it a try. youconvertit.com.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my pick is kind of eye candy. It is a productivity improver, especially for people who are maybe in a mixed environment. And when I say mixed environment, they're working on a Windows machine and a Mac. You Mac users are very familiar with the concept of the dock. That's something very unfamiliar to Windows users. But through the wonders of little gadgets and little tools that can be built into operating systems, there's something called RocketDock.com. That's D-O-C-K. So RocketDock.com is a little utility that you can install on a Windows machine that will semi-replicate the dock functionality of a Mac. So it allows you to, and the dock is simply a lineup of applications, tools, folders, all in one location where you have one-click access. It's kind of cool to play with as well. When you hover your mouse over the dock itself, the icons enlarge, and you can kind of scroll across them and see what's there. You can drag things into them, files, folders, applications, shortcuts, whatever it is, and then with one click, you can open them up. So if you're looking to marry the two operating systems and get comfortable in either one so that the way you approach using the operating systems is similar, this might be something for you to check out. There are what's called docklets, which are little sub-applications that can be added to the dock. So you can replicate the stacks, let's say, functionality that's on in Leopard, where you can click on an icon and up pops in kind of a stack format all the files that are under that. Again, it's free, open source, and the ability to add the docklets is kind of cool. There's all kinds of things that you can add to it. So check it out, RocketDock.com.
Sounds like a way for us PC users to get inside the Mac brain a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, and obviously this is I think this is a Mac user who built this to encourage the switching that is going on in many parts of the world at this point. For hey, isn't this cool? Wouldn't you really like to do this for real? On the Mac. So,
okay.
but it works for us. So works well.
Very cool.
Our Wells.net feature of the week is next, Sally. We skipped this section of the show last week, so what do we have this week?
Well, I wanted to point our listeners to the campus ministry site. It is back to school time, and for many of us, that means sending a student off to college, perhaps for the first year. Mm-hmm. And our campus ministry site is there to support those students that are college bound. Excellent site. You can find it at wells.net/jump/campus ministry. And there's three or four things that I wanted to point you to on the campus ministry site. First of all, they have wonderful online devotions. It's actually called Directions. And we'll include a link to that in our show notes, specifically geared to college students, actually written by a campus ministry pastor who's there, living the campus life with the students and mm-hmm. understands the issues that they're struggling with in their day-to-day walk with the Lord. Also available online is the Light Source magazine, which is a, I believe, twice a year publication from Campus Ministry for college students specifically. And additionally, there are MP3 podcasts available of Campus Ministry sermon series from three different Wells Campus Ministry programs across the country. So if you want to load up your iPod with some great content, you're going to find that the Word on Campus series is going to really speak to the hearts of those at the college level. Mm-hmm. And then finally, Campus Ministry provides for free subscriptions to both Meditations and Forward in Christ for the students that they're aware of, that they have contact information for. So if you know of a college student or if you are a college student and would like to receive free subscriptions to Meditations and Forward in Christ, I'll include a link in the show notes to the sign-up form for that on the Campus Ministry site.
Great. That's jump/campus ministry. So absolutely, we're always looking to get as many of our college students in that system so that we can keep them connected to God's Word, at least in whatever way we can. So hopefully mm-hmm. helping out congregations in that fashion. What would we like to promote this week? I think we're looking at our Synod's web hosting program called Final Web.
That's right, Martin. I think we talked about this a little very early on in our podcast, but I thought it was
right.
worth a mention today about our Final Web web hosting solution. This is a an awesome program that the Synod makes available at a cost of $21 per month to congregations, schools, or other Wells-associated organizations. We have some camps and school associations and things like that that are using the Final Web solution as well. Final Web is an all-encompassing package. You're going to find domain registration, email, professional design templates, subsites, and tons of storage available to you with the Final Web solution. It's kind of like a blank slate that you can just fill in and build very quickly and easily a really professional-looking website. And in addition to that, we have a supplemental resource available for those in Wells and ELS that subscribe to the Final Web solution. We have a user community out on our Wells.net University site. And when you sign up, you're automatically subscribed to this. We have weekly emails, video tutorials, and tons of royalty-free images that you can use on your website. So a really excellent solution. I think our count is up over 400 organizations within Wells that are using this solution. And we've heard just wonderful positive feedback about it. So just wanted to mention it here today.
Yeah, when you get that many participants, the user community becomes really a positive thing where a lot of people are trying different things and have tried different things that can share. They can share with the class, as it were, and I think everybody wins. And Sally, you just do a wonderful job of keeping everybody updated on new concepts, new tools, or even some refreshes on old tools. So it's really helpful to have that many people using the same system and a lot of flexibility. So if you haven't considered that yet and you're looking to either get on the web for your congregation, school, whatever, or you're looking for a refresh or an easier-to-use system, and that's probably the biggest advantage of a system like this, is that you can distribute administration. You don't have to, you know, kind of be tied to one individual who has to maintain the entire site. You can distribute the administration of that for different people to different areas of the site. So that's jump/web hosting on Wells.net. Community feedback. A lot of people talking to us the past couple of weeks, Sally.
Yeah, we love to hear from our listeners and just encourage people to share with us their ideas and questions so that we can address them here on the show. We heard from several different ones. First of all, through the social bookmarking site Delicious, someone named Border Guard, or at least their screen name was Border Guard, tagged a great site.
Probably not his given name.
Yeah, maybe not. It's Biblos. Biblos.com, and what this site has is the ability to read and search the Bible in many different languages. So a really impressive website, and if you're doing anything in different languages or whatever, this would be a great resource for you to make use of.
Yeah, kind of like Bible Gateway, but I do think it has the original texts available. The Greek and the Hebrew are on Biblos.com, and I don't know if they are on Bible Gateway.
Yeah, so, very
good
powerful
resource.
Tool.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, Border Guard.
We also heard from a coworker at the Senate Administration Building. Kind of fun to hear from someone that's right there at the SAB with us, David Savatsky. He works in the World Missions Promotions area. So he's kind of the go-to person if you'd like to have a World Mission speaker for your congregation or event that you're planning. And David is... was happy to find us on iTunes. He was searching iTunes and stumbled across the Wells Tech podcast and thought that was pretty cool that we were out on iTunes. So worth a mention to our listeners if you aren't already subscribed through iTunes. That's an easy way to get the weekly podcast downloaded automatically to your iPod if you so desire.
Yeah, just a reminder, Sally, to our congregations who produce audio podcasts, whether they be, and when I say podcasts, that's kind of anything that's an audio file. So sermons, Bible studies, those kinds of things that you put on your website, you should really think about getting them on iTunes. It's free. It's an easy process. So just go to iTunes, and I think there's a link called Submit Your Podcast on iTunes. Just follow the directions and get your stuff listed so people can stumble on it, I guess, if they're doing a search. If you do a search on Wells, for instance, on iTunes, you'll get a number of results, including our podcast, but all kinds of other things that are going on, other sermons that are posted by congregations, etc.
Right. I can remember maybe a year or two ago doing that search, and I came up with two congregations that had sermons out there. But now it's definitely a growing list and just a wonderful resource and a place that's a more public place so that we can get the word out more to the world.
That's the idea.
And, you know, a side note on David's email, I actually stumbled upon World Missions Promotions out on Facebook. So if you're a Facebook user, you might want to check out the World Missions Promotions site where David posts different things about speakers and that kind of thing as that information is available. So two great, more public locations for us to share all the great content that we're developing as a community in Wells.
Yep, great.
And finally, just a couple of mentions of various questions that have been coming up and hopefully things that we can address in future shows as well. But there was a question about wiki tools, and Martin and I have talked about maybe doing a show specifically focused on wikis and the different tools that are available. There was a question about a new interactive whiteboard technology called eBeam that you can use without actually installing a smart board kind of interface, but more with your regular whiteboards and projection systems that are already in place. So I think some interesting technology we'd like to research further. And then finally, we had a question about online collaboration, kind of along the lines of the view site that I discussed earlier in the show, some that tie in with Skype calls, Unite and GogRock. So maybe we'll have a chance to play with those tools and discuss them in future shows as well. It's great to have that feedback and people, you know, kind of pointing us to some of these new tools.
Oh, there's no end of things that we could be looking at, right? And the challenge,
true.
And that's one of the reasons this show exists, is to kind of weed through that for our listeners and really point out things that might be useful for ministry. So that's why we'd love you to stay tuned. And we'd love you to contribute to the show, and there are many ways to do that. Perhaps the best way is to go to our website, wellstech.wells.net, read about past shows, see all the show notes, and also all the avenues through which you can connect with us. There's an email address, wellstech@wells.net. We'd love a voicemail from you, 414-375-2334. Sally mentioned two other areas in the community feedback section, the delicious tagging system. Just tag whatever you like that you'd like us to talk about or consider with the Wells Tech tag. You can also find us on SearchBook. Just search for the group Wells Tech. And finally, the Wells Tech listserv, very active community of Wells technologists who are eager to answer your questions. So take advantage of all those. I'd love to get a voicemail. We have yet to play a voicemail on the show. Maybe we need some kind of incentive or contest that we can put together. What we should do is one way to get Wells people to participate is to offer something free. So maybe we ought to print up some T-shirts and offer some T-shirts for any voicemailers that come in. Let's think about that for next week. A Wells Tech T-shirt. How about that?
Sounds like a great idea.
All right. Well, that's the show for this week. Thanks, Sally, as usual. Great work. It was kind of the Sally show this week.
Kind of scary.
Yeah. Next week will be mine, so we'll be talking about my conference activities down in Dallas. I'm looking forward to that. Let's close the show with a featured Wells musician. This is the singing group Revelation from Wisconsin Lutheran College. We're going to be playing their song Such Joy from their album We Walk by Faith. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
There's a peace that floods my soul. Unspeakable joy, such peace. touch my heart, and there will be such joy, such unspeakable joy, such peace, an everlasting peace, such love, a pure